North Carolina's House Bill 2 was in the news from the time it was signed into law in March 2016 until its recent reconfiguration, HB 142, that officially brought the NCAA tournament back to North Carolina. The new law repealed the controversial issue of transgender access to bathrooms, but retained language from the original bill that keeps local governments from enacting their own legislation that is inclusive of the LGBTQ community. Many are not satisfied with the new law. The ACLU released a statement saying, quote, "It is not a real repeal, and it doesn't leave North Carolina the way it was before HB 2 was rushed into law last year," end quote. Jasmine Beach Ferreira of the Campaign for Southern Equality stated that, quote, "The Campaign for Southern Equality calls on Governor Cooper to veto House Bill 142, which fails to fully repeal HB 2 and instead creates new barriers to the LGBTQ equality in North Carolina. From the moment it passed, HB 2 has been a disaster for our state. Above all, it has harmed transgender people by attacking their basic rights and dignity. However, HB 142 does not fix this disaster. In fact, the bill makes it illegal for cities to pass non-discrimination ordinances protecting LGBTQ people. Under HB 142, our state would continue to single out the LGBTQ community and make them second-class citizens under the law," end quote. In Asheville, Democratic legislators were split. Senator Terry Van Dunn supported the replacement bill, as did Representative John Ager, while Reps Susan Fisher and Brian Turner voted against the measure. Alongside Ager and Van Dunn, Mayor Manhammer came out in full support, stating to the press, quote, "The bill represents a compromise between the legislature and the governor. I applaud their ability to come to an agreement and see it through to passage," end quote. Here to speak with us is David Forbes, editor of the Asheville Blade. Maybe you can give our listeners some clarifying framing around what is HB 142 and what does it do?
So it has been put out in the media coverage, which I have to say has been abysmal, from national media to some, though not all, statewide media. It has been framed as a, quote, repeal compromise. And both those parts are pretty much functionally untrue. It's worth understanding, because it was reported a lot as the bathroom bill, what HB 2 actually did. There were a few things that it did. So HB 2 was a blatantly transphobic law. It was blatantly targeted LGBT, especially trans people. It banned localities from passing non-discrimination ordinances, which previously Charlotte had, and then Charlotte wanted to extend protections in that ordinance, which had been on the books for about half a century in one form or another, to LGBT people, and then the legislature retaliated. So it forbade those. It also forbade municipalities or local governments from making their own labor regulations or passing minimum wage stuff. And that actually, that latter part had been kind of a gray area in state law before. There had been some pushes in Greensboro and even in Asheville to kind of bring that issue forward. So it hit kind of on the labor front too. HB 2 also removed the right to sue in state court over discrimination. That was super controversial at the time. And it did say that in any government agency, and government agency is very widely defined. It includes schools, it includes, you know, universities, community colleges, and it includes local governments. That any facility, people had to use the bathroom matching by their, quote, biological sex, which this bill defined as the one listed in the birth certificate. This is clearly targeted at trans people who already suffer a lot of threats of violence for just trying to use public accommodations anyway. And so the whole thing was kind of this stew of like anti-labor, anti-LGBT stuff. The one part of HB 2 that has been fully completely repealed was actually repealed last year when the right to sue was restored because the Republicans were under immense pressure. The law became very unpopular. It made North Carolina – cost North Carolina a lot of money, made the state national laughingstock. That part is actually genuinely repealed. It's off the books. It's done. However, what this revamp, I think is the best way to put it, does is essentially functionally nothing to that, to the stuff I just mentioned. Localities are still banned from non-discrimination ordinances and from labor protections or minimum wage protections until 2020, at which point and you've already seen talk about this among some Republicans, they could just extend that ban further. So functionally, for, you know, the next 4 years, that ban remains totally in place. It did technically remove the birth certificate requirement, but that was unenforceable in the first place. So it did help to drum up a lot of fear and prejudice and violence against trans people in the state. and across the country for that matter. But that also that law was also on really dubious constitutional grounds for a lot of different reasons. So if a local government had wanted to say, no, we are going to ensure that trans people can access, you know, facilities, which means they can exist in public. There's a reason that access to bathrooms and public facilities have been covered under every piece of civil rights legislation ever made. If they wanted to make that policy under HB 2, they would have ran into this ban. They would have had to go to court. There were actually already some efforts in court by, you know, by attorneys, the ACLU and various other groups to overturn this. So with that, now it does strike the biological sex part and puts it back to the state's old rules, which said you can't, you know, deny access based on sex. Now, that category itself, basically, there is a really good civil rights argument going back decades that protections on sex and civil rights laws and public accommodation laws and non-discrimination stuff includes protections for gender identity. That was the interpretation taken by the Justice Department of the previous administration. However, because of the realities of the political and legal environment, asserting that requires a court battle. So if you are a local government trying to say, hey, we interpret that to mean the revised legal situation to mean trans people do have access to restrooms, then you end up in court. Before this quote-unquote repeal happened, you would have ended up in court. So like functionally, nothing has changed on that front. And I checked this with multiple attorneys because the weeds of this issue can get complicated. But basically, the legal mechanism to deny trans people access to restrooms and the ability to exist in public has changed. That is it. There was a really good piece in Mother Jones about how it has made things unsafe for trans people on other levels. But the new law has. But you know, it is reporters, I think a lot of them have done a disservice by framing this as a repeal compromise. It functionally does nothing. It functionally keeps HB 2 largely intact for at least four more years. And you know, it wasn't like there was some back and forth and compromise. The only thing it might do is that it might give – might, and it's a big legal gray area, give municipalities a little more control over non-discrimination clauses in contracts. Even HB 2 didn't take away a municipality's ability to have its own non-discrimination rules with, say, its employees. Asheville has one, a lot of other municipalities do, saying that they won't discriminate against their city workers on the basis of being LGBT or any number of other factors, and that they'll pay them a certain rate. You know, those remain intact throughout HB 2. They've not been changed by this. So functionally, nothing has changed.
What are the forces at play that brought about this retooled bill?
So there are a lot of them. So going into this, and, you know, of course, you know, I have a column called Turncoats, which probably gives you people an idea of my opinion, as did my statements before on this. And then this is my opinion. This is, I think, a pretty analyzed out read on this. So HB 2 really backfired on the Republican Party here. Even a year when they did pretty well overall, they lost the governor's mansion. HB 2 was a hideously unpopular law. It made North Carolina, you know, national laughingstock, a punchline to a joke, which even business conservatives really hate when that happens. And it cost the state a lot of money. And it was about to cost it basketball, basically, which is, if people may have heard, is kind of a big thing here. The NCAA had kind of set this deadline that, you know, look, you need to repeal this bill. You know, we are concerned for these reasons. So given that, there was actually a lot of pressure from business conservatives on the Republican leadership to get some sort of repeal done. And you had various back and forth. In December, there was a even milder, you know, quote-unquote compromise that still left a lot of HB 2 intact but would have had the ban on local ordinances be for 6 months. At the time, the then just sworn in Governor Roy Cooper and the Democrats said that was, you know, unacceptable, and then they ended up taking a far worse deal. But so the forces, that pressure kind of mounted on the Republicans. But because a good chunk of their own caucus are really, really dedicated to being very awful bigots, they didn't have the votes within their own party just to do that. So for once, and this is rare because the Democrats, due to a lot of gerrymandering and some of their party's own problems and other issues, don't have a huge amount of seats in North Carolina. In fact, the Republicans technically can push through over a governor's veto. They have a seat or two over that limit. But in this case, it actually was a rare situation where the Democrats' votes were really important to this. There was no way that without some Democratic support, any sort of, you know, change or appeal to this could get pushed through. So they had a lot of leverage. Also, the other option, which, you know, is pretty politically appealing if they thought it out, or if their leadership had thought it out, was that they don't pass or appeal by a deadline. The NCAA does pull out North Carolina, and then you go in the next election in 2018 with this, you know, likely be 2018, with this already toxic issue that has hurt the GOP very badly, especially at the statewide level. And you go in with a pretty strong hand to push and say, look, they keep costing our state because they're so entrenched, they're so intent on being bigoted. We got to, like, move forward. We got to repeal HB2. So that was kind of the pressure on it. However, a lot of the Democrats were – their political culture, it's one reason it's in such a shambolic state right now and why they do tend to lose political battles, is big on compromise. And not just compromise in the sense of, okay, we have a legitimate disagreement, but both sides have a point. Let's work this out. I mean, HB2 is a repellent law. It is blatantly just intended for bigotry. But they have a belief that they have to be seen to compromise for some reason. And this is very deeply into the culture of a lot of the Democratic Party. Not all of it, but most of it, a lot of it, national level and at the state level, and even now the local level. And this idea of compromise is good for its own sake puts pressure on them to adopt the deal, even if it's a really bad deal. And this deal, they got practically nothing. As a matter of fact, there's a good argument they lost what had been a pretty politically strong position, even if repeal hadn't happened. However, you know, a lot of them wanted to seem like they were actually repealing this and turning the page. Frankly, a lot of Democrats' devotion to LGBT rights is lip service or very non-existent. This kind of proves why. So a lot of them were ready, and some example but set by Asheville, which had brought up, kept a basketball tournament here, the SoCon tournament, while giving very little concessions to the LGBT community in the process and doing very little to fight this law. So I think that kind of set a model that, hey, maybe we can basically, and I use this term in the article, you know, ditch us queers, I say that as a trans person, in and basically get, you know, basketball. And they want a kind of that economic get. And the only thing I figure is that they have a culture that is so deeply embedded in compromising, even when the compromises are terrible, even when it costs you politically, even when it hurts you with your base, and that they are – we really wanted this damn basketball tournament back, and viewed for some reason that they would be hurt even though all the election and polling information kind of went against that. So basically, I don't think you can consider a compromise unless – you consider one side in a war just throwing down all of its weapons and running away as far as fast as their panic will take them. A compromise. It's not. It's they got politically routed on this because the majority of their party just completely folded.
With all that in mind, do people have the impression that HB2 has been repealed since the NCAA agreed to end their boycott and SoCon happened in Asheville this year? Do people see this as a repeal?
Some do, some don't. I can tell you that generally progressive groups and the LG community do not see it. You know, this deal was taken, it should be noted, over the opposition of every single civil rights, labor, and LGBT group out there. Even ones that have disagreements, wide disagreements in some cases on other, you know, policy stances or other ways to approach things, all agreed. And, you know, like the NAACP condemned it, which is very active in the state, especially in pushing back against the Republican Party's kind of initiatives, called this an insult to civil rights. You know, the ACLU condemned it strongly. Planned Parenthood, the AFL-CIO, like you name a group that is associated with like left of center progressives, anti, you know, conservatism in the state, and all of them opposed it universally without exception, very harshly in some terms. The Human Rights Campaign, which is actually, you know, has a kind of a shoddy record of its own, especially on defending trans people, was actually very against this, this deal, and straight up said that they will run candidates in primaries for anyone who voted for it. Like that's a pretty far step for a group that has – that's a pretty, you know, quote unquote mainstream group that's generally been tied with the Democratic Party and even the more centrist elements, lukewarm elements, pretty heavily. So that was – so I think people have that impression, part of it is because the media coverage has been abysmal. You know, I was hearing this framed as a repeal compromise even by journalists who dang well should know better. And if they bothered to read the bill at all, would have seen that it clearly kept, you know, the vast majority of this intact. It clearly functionally did nothing. You know, and there are ways to phrase that. You can say, you know, Democratic leaders agreed to, you know, a revamp of the bill that kept most major clauses in place. That's me putting my, you know, objective reporter hat on for a second. But like, there's no way you can look at this not just as, you know, our publication, myself, are heavily anti-bigotry, of course, and I don't think you'd be neutral on matters like this, but even if someone was just physically describing what the bill did, describing accurately what the bill did, that would be it. So some people do have that impression. At the same time, you've seen a fair amount of pushback too. Notably, two local legislators, Susan Fisher and Brian Turner, did not vote for it. Said that, you know, they wouldn't accept this, and they didn't think it was the right move. But two did, Senator Susan Fisher and Representative John Ager. And Asheville's mayor, Esther Mannheimer, actually endorsed this, used the word applaud. She applauded the ability to come through with this bill, which was – I mean, I'll be honest. I think that's – I think giving people that impression is dishonest that it has been repealed. And I think the mayor of a city like Asheville, where a lot of people, a lot of LGBT people especially, are still under threat, a lot of trans people are still under threat, that's a betrayal. And the mayor's support of this bill is frankly despicable. She should be ashamed.
So what do you see as next steps? What happens next here in Asheville as well as in North Carolina?
Well, I think so. I think some things have happened by this. The Democratic Party, or at least the kind of leadership and organization of it, have definitely, you know, beyond shot themselves in the foot on this. Electoral politics isn't just, you know, what your party organization looks like, especially when you have a organization that's in such disarray and it's been defeated as much as the North Carolina Democratic Party has. A lot of it is our voters kind of, you know, either agree with some of what you want to do or are more favorable towards you and are against your opponents. Are they riled up about something? Do they think, you know, their interests aren't being represented? Do they think their lives are under threat or their livelihoods are under threat? And so, you know, our groups kind of that represent some of your interests, you know, say fundamentalist churches in the right wing, some of the civil rights groups I just mentioned, more on the left of center, are they active? You know, is the politics kind of leaning in your direction? You definitely saw that in North Carolina, like the Moral Monday type stuff, which did rally a lot of like progressive groups and factions kind of under one banner, certainly contributed more of them getting to the polls and voting, and certainly kind of strengthened the hand of a lot of Democratic candidates in the process. So they've kind of weakened their hold with that base a lot. And it was pretty tentative already. I mean, I get asked repeatedly, just, you know, as a millennial who's really involved in politics and does try to get people to vote, you know, why don't more people of my generation join up and help with the Democratic Party? And the answer I get the most from other millennials about why they aren't interested in that is the Democrats are largely cowards who are bad at politics. And the fact is, you know, that's a brutal response. I get. That's the truth of it. I've heard that more times than I can count. And incidents like this are why. So definitely weakens their standing. And what I think it sets up is like the potential for, because some more kind of left to center groups and factions, and even some very left wing ones, are pretty well organized, better organized than they used to be, I should say, at this point. I think you're going to see a lot of primaries. I think this issue will come up in the Asheville City Council election. Mannheimer is running for re-election. That is not a very popular stance. There'd already been some, because after HB2, council really didn't do that much. And it kind of went with its city attorney, who is very far right wing on this issue and has even, you know, said some comments that are either clueless or outright bigoted about trans and genderqueer people who use they, them pronouns. And so this is not an issue where like things were great between a lot of LGBT groups and city council. There was especially starting last year, there was a lot of trepidations. That's definitely there's some tension locally about that. That's definitely going to play out. And so, but like as of today, Transmission, which is one of the main trans support and advocacy groups in town, issued a statement saying Asheville City Council needs to pass a non-discrimination ordinance. They need to directly challenge HB2. They should have done it a while back. And basically pass a non-discrimination ordinance that will violate this new law as well as the old one. Shows you how little the law has changed. And you will have to go to court, but it's worth it and you need to. The Campus for Southern Equality, which is a regional LGBT rights group that is based in Asheville, has played a major role, actually offered to give the city a legal team and laid out a position, a white paper for them to do that back in when SOCOM was considering coming here. They suggested they should do that as a condition of SOCOM coming here, prove that they were ready to really fight this bill. They didn't. The city didn't. But I think you'll see that pressure kind of renewed. And frankly, if people are disgusted by this, and I've heard a lot of Ashevillians who are, call your city council members, email them. You know, most council members, everyone except Mannheimer, have not taken a position on this issue publicly, as far as I know. And, you know, call them, write them, email them, show up at council meetings and say, look, this is unacceptable. Asheville needs to pass a non-discrimination ordinance, go to court to defend it, and needs to specifically condemn HB 142. Needs to say this is not a compromise. It's not a repeal. It does not protect our LGBT citizens. And we are totally against this completely. And we will fight it. And frankly, you know, they need to put pressure on the mayor as well. Council, I think, has expected a perpetual pat in the back for some decent but very basic actions on LGBT rights over the years. We have not led the state at all on this issue. There's been a lot of lip service. There's been a lot of expectations of constant deference, you know, for things like hanging a pride flag from City Hall after a federal court legalized equal marriage here. And frankly, I think they need to stop expecting that and they need to do their damn jobs.
If people want to follow this issue closely, where can they look?
So we have that column over at AshevilleBlade.com called Turncoats, which goes into a lot of this history and a lot of like how this bill came to be and what people can do about it. And I'll continue, of course, you know, we report on local government constantly and we'll continue to report on this issue as it plays out in City Hall, if it plays out in City Hall, which I believe that it will at this point.
Well, David, thank you so much for the context and the background here and for talking with us, as always, on the Asheville FM NewsHour.
Always a pleasure.